But you can go and check out Free Palestine TV at TV Free Palestine on YouTube. Rumble is Free Palestine TV. And where else, Laith?
On X, it's at TV Free Palestine. And if you go to our website, freepalestine.video, you get all the socials. We're also on Telegram and Instagram.
Thanks a lot for coming on to this little show again, Laith. I know how media busy you are. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Chris. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
And I want everyone else to stay tuned because I'll be back with Salam Hamdan from Ramallah, and we're going to talk about her messaging out from there and the situation there worsening by the minute. Thanks again, Laith.
Thank you.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people. His bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, headlines of Syrian refugee massacres and famine rife across the Gaza Strip hardly seem to raise eyebrows now as Israel's genocide grinds towards its ninth month. It's almost as if the latest are meant to obscure the recent, as the number of atrocities and their degree of depravity multiplies. But it's not confined just to Gaza. The occupied territories are also subject to horrors inflicted daily by the IDF, police, and settler goon squads. Hundreds in the West Bank have been killed since October. Thousands more wounded or snatched up into Israeli prisons and detention camps. Representatives in the United Nations Security Council expressed their concern yesterday, the Algerian envoy Omar Benjami saying, quote, the situation in the West Bank will deteriorate further if the occupying power does not cease its policy of terror, of expansion, of settlement. Salam Hamdan is a Palestinian political activist and social feminist from Ramallah in the West Bank. Salam recently spoke here in Victoria on Two States in Palestine, Solution or Fantasy. She's back at home in Ramallah where the situation there is getting more dangerous as the outrages of the occupying military and their Palestine Authority collaborators grow. Welcome back to the program, Salam.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much for having me again.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Salam, Hurriyat has released a report on Israeli prison Sadeh Tamim. Who is Hurriyat and what is this place that they are referring to?
Yeah, Hurriyat is a Palestinian local NGO that is concerned about the human rights issues and the you know, the status and the issues of the prisoners inside the Israeli prisons. They release press releases and reports like systematically. And recently they have released this report about prison camp in the southern part of Palestine, and they have issued very critical information, very concerning information about the situations of the prisoners there. And I think they have managed also to conduct interviews with some of the people who've been released from there.
Yeah, we saw a photograph released a couple few days ago of a guy bug-eyed, clearly severely traumatized. He was released from that facility, if I understand right.
Yes, yes. He's been there for over a month, according to the interview, and he's been severely tortured, and he was extremely confused when he was found inside Gaza, and extremely terrorized. And he was also afraid to speak because I think they get threatened that you shouldn't speak out or you shouldn't tell about what's happening there. And I think I'm hearing now from, you know, people I know in the media that he is recovering slowly.
Yeah, it looks terrific. Do you know, are there reports of people from the West Bank being imprisoned in this facility as well?
Actually, this facility is, it has the nickname Guantanamo of Israel, because this facility has nothing to do with the normal Israeli jails and prisons scattered all over the West Bank and also in Israel. It has been created after the war, and it's meant for, you know, the interrogation of people captured from Gaza. And it's run by the Israeli military, by the Israeli army. So there's sparse information about it. It's like completely secret. I mean, it's so much undershadowed, and not so much information. Most of the people there, I mean, to my knowledge, all the people there, all the prisoners there, are from Gaza, not from the West Bank.
But people in the West Bank are being taken, and they're being taken in their hundreds into the prison systems there. What's going on in the West Bank as far as people and these are it seems to me from what I've seen that it's a broad spectrum, old, young, male, female, being grabbed up and taken away, and their families not knowing what's become of them. What's the situation there in that regard in the West Bank?
Yes, since the start of the war, this war, it's been recorded that over 9,500 people from the West Bank, men, women, and children, have been imprisoned and have been subjected to, like, extreme conditions, horrendous conditions, actually. I have a personal incident that I'd like to tell you about. A relative of mine, he's 20 years old, has been imprisoned in Ofer prison nearby Ramallah. And has been there for 19 days. He was released after 19 days. And my husband and I, we went to get him. He was completely naked because they stripped them out of their clothes before they released them. And he was in horrible conditions. He had lost in 19 days approximately 9 to 10 kilos. He was in shock, extremely traumatized. We took him home. We tried to, you know, to talk to him, to ask him about what has happened to him. He talked about the hunger, about how they starve them in the prison, and about the horrible conditions, the lack of fresh water. They're not allowed to have clothes on them. They sleep in their underwears. And he said that they line them up on the floor every morning, and the soldiers come and urinate on them. And he tried to hide his face during this procedure, and he was severely beaten. We also, ever since he was, he locked himself in the room. He wouldn't speak to anybody. He turned off his mobile, and he kind of cut himself off the public life. And actually, we're expecting, I have to tell you that he's been subjected to more than that, because he had before that he had such a strong spirit, and he came out broken. So we have this fear that he's been sexually harassed, or even worse than that. This is just one incident. I also hear about different incidents, and I've been watching different interviews that has been videotaped by the different Palestinian NGOs, women NGOs, about how the women are being treated inside these jails, especially the veiled women. They were always stripped naked. They tried to humiliate them. Even if, I mean, according to their statements, even if they didn't do anything sexually to them, they always threatened them that they would rape them. They will rape their children, terrorize them with that. Also, there are the images, I don't know if you've seen it, Chris, yourself, of many prisoners who've been released in the West Bank and have lost so much weight. One of them is the head of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Aziz Dweik, who has lost at least 20 kilograms. And he's been released for 3 days, and then he's been imprisoned all over again. So the situations are horrendous inside these prisons. The lawyers who manage to visit talk about it all the time. And also the Israelis, as they are doing with Gaza, they are blocking the international organizations from coming in and investigating.
Well, what sort of local supports do these people being released have? As you say, that the internationals aren't being allowed to get that at them. This is something that's not happening to any, you know, one family or any even particular type of people. It seems to be across the board to me, and systemic on the part of the Israeli authorities. What sort of local support can these people get when they get out? You describe your own relative and his trauma. Is there anything that can be done for them?
Like, the vast majority do not get psychological support. They get the medical one, though, in the West Bank, because we still have the hospitals and the clinics. But on the psychological level, on the trauma level, not so much. Like, most of the people are even not aware of the level of trauma and the importance of the psychotherapy. And also the psychotherapy is very sparse, very limited to certain, you know, levels of people, like, you know, middle classes, upper classes, whatever, people who are not reluctant to receive psychotherapy. And also, most of these prisoners are unwilling to talk. One of them actually is my father. I mean, I remember when I was a child, my father was imprisoned several times and severely tortured. And he's been always reluctant to speak till the day about what has actually happened to him. For so many reasons, Chris, like, people feel that this is something that's happening to everybody, and it's part of our destiny as people subjected to the occupation, and we have to deal with it with courage. And some people are reluctant to talk about the things that might make them feel ashamed. So they prefer to block it away. And also this psychotherapy is something new to the Palestinians, because usually the Palestinian National Movement used to act underground. And there was, I mean, this has entailed so much of secrecy. And people, of course, wouldn't just, you know, sit on a chair in front of a psychotherapist and, you know, speak out.
Well, these attacks, we saw this, the Americans employed this in Iraq and in Afghanistan, in Guantanamo, as you mentioned, in the other notorious prisons, Abu Ghraib. This is designed to attack people where they're deemed to be culturally vulnerable because these things are so shameful to them.
Yes, yes, that's very true. I mean, sexual harassment has always been there. Rape wasn't at all common in the Israeli prisons, I have to tell you. But now it seems to be to become really common with this war, especially in that prison camp in the south, like as a mean, as an effective mean of torture, interrogation for information. And because, I mean, this culture, this, you know, fascist culture is spreading in Israel, and they are hearing from their leaders that they are entitled to do whatever to protect Israel from its enemies, this and that. They fill their minds with this. And now they commit horrors without blinking. So rape became an effective tool because, as you mentioned, it's like culturally, it's a big deal here.
Well, I mentioned the UN Security Council meeting and their expressions of concern about what's going on in the West Bank. The Slovenian ambassador, Samuel Zbogar, he says he's alarmed and says, quote, "We remain concerned over the advancement of settlement plans, demolitions and seizures of Palestinian-owned structures in front of our eyes. We're deeply concerned about impunity of persistent settler violence affecting the population in the West Bank and aid delivery to Gaza as well." What's going on? I've seen images of bulldozers tearing up the streets in West Bank towns, and committing what seems to be just random acts of sabotage and vandalism. What's happening in that regard?
Well, sabotage and vandalism has been happening here for so many years. Mm-hmm. It's not new. It's nothing new to us. And as I spoke in my previous interview with you, you know, the confiscations of lands and settlements and, you know, home demolitions and has been going on and on and on. But now, as this government is basically dominated by the settlers, extreme settlers, particularly the West Bank is being handed to the Minister of Finance, Smotrich, who has released his plan about the West Bank even from before becoming a minister, when he was still in the opposition. If he's to be handed the West Bank, what he would do. And now he's actually in charge of the West Bank. And he's talking about changing, as he call it, a radical change of the scenery in the West Bank, radical change of the conditions in the West Bank, and more free hand for settlements to grow and to become to grow into cities, and then to be annexed eventually the entire West Bank to Israel, according to his plan. And there should be two kind of people, minority, they call us, the Palestinians, who should remain as a minority. The first kind, the immigrating kind, people who won't accept this reality and they will choose to leave the country. And the people who are accepting their fate under the full Israeli control and, you know, obeying and slaving for Israel, is actually talking about that. They have started with like more extreme measures from before. Like we've always have been challenged with water, with the main resources in the West Bank. Water is one of them, of course. Most of the ground wells in the entire country, in historical Palestine, actually are inside the West Bank. but are fully controlled by the Israelis. They dig the water, they take it out. A private Israeli company called Makarot that collaborates with the government sells the water back to the Palestinians with high prices. We have tanks over our houses. We don't have like running water all the time like the rest of the countries, like in Canada, for example. But we have to store water in tanks on the top of our buildings. And we used to have, like, for example, we used to have some shares, some portions of water. And now with this new ruling of Smotrich, it's been decided that the shares are to be cut in half in Ramallah. So we now get 50% of the amount of the water we used to get from before, which was already small. And in Bethlehem, 30%. We received this, announcement from the Palestinian Water Authority telling us to rationalize with water. Don't take showers on a daily basis. Don't do this, don't do that. Don't water your plants because you will receive water maximum twice a week. So yes, the roads, they are blocking many roads. It became an real actual challenge for the people to move from one place to the other. It took me like a while when I came back from Canada. I traveled from Jericho to Ramallah, which is approximately 45 minutes. It took me 2 hours because many of the main roads were blocked. The taxi had to find their ways through the mountains to get to another city. So it became really a challenge for people to move from one place to the other. I know many people who are living in the villages started to move to Ramallah or to the cities nearby their villages, because they cannot travel on a daily basis to their work or to their universities for their children or schools or whatever. And it became a real challenge.
Well, it seems like a plan to depopulate the outlying areas and concentrate the population. Médecins Sans Frontières, and a couple of weeks ago, they put out a report titled "In the West Bank, Israeli Forces Render Healthcare Inaccessible When It's Needed Most." This, of course, for people that do live out in the smaller towns and villages, they say that medical and paramedical staff are repeatedly attacked, harassed, blocked, and hindered as they attempt to care for the wounded in these military incursions. They cite a 42-hour military incursion in Jenin, and they call this a pattern of brutal attacks. What about for those living outside of Ramallah? Is Ramallah an island of relative calm and safety compared to the rest of the West Bank?
Yes, actually, yes. As far as you are inside Ramallah and maintaining your own business, you're not trying to get out of Ramallah. Or as far as you are in your safe place when they invade to take people, to kidnap people from inside the city. Because they come and they bomb and they shoot, and even in Ramallah itself. But in comparison to other cities, yes, it's relatively much safer. In the other cities, I mean, with the medical teams, this has been the case since ever. Yeah. Like, we always worry about them, you know, when an ambulance tries to get an injured person, they shoot at the ambulances. And sometimes they injure the people, the medical teams. And usually when they kill people, they kidnap them, they take them. Because, first of all, sometimes they use their organs, they can. And also it's another measurement of, it's another way of, punishment. collective punishment and punishment for the families of these people who try to resist or throw stones or whatever, that they deprive them from the bodies of their children. So, yes, it's becoming much and much harder for the different parts of the country. And the basic idea after that is to, you know, push people out of the country. I mean, they talk about it on their TVs. It's not a secret anymore or a conspiracy or whatever. It's out in the open. They talk about it. They talk about how, you know, this, you know, biblical place, they call it, is overpopulated by Arabs, by Palestinians, and most of these have to get out one way or the other.
Well, Salam, we're fast running out of time, but before we go, there was in the news here some coverage of the young man, Mujahed Abadi, who was tied to the hood, wounded, beaten, and tied to the hood of an Israeli Jeep as it drove through portions. Yes. I can't remember what town it was. I think it might have been outside of Jenin. It was, yes. Do you know how, firstly, Mujahed, how he is now, his health?
I'm not so sure because they've taken him. We didn't hear any news about him afterwards. The funny part is that, you know, there was like one interview, one of these officers in Jenin, and he was saying that, no, he was injured, and we wanted to take him to help him to the hospital, and we didn't have enough room inside the Jeep, so we had to put him on the hood of the Jeep. To tell you, it was that day, the temperature was 38 degrees in Jenin, and he was put on the hood, on the top of the motor of that Jeep, which was like boiling, and he was severely injured, as reported. And they kept, you know, driving around with him and using him as a human shield, looking for other people.
Yeah, there's a picture. There's a picture of that convoy going, driving past two Red Crescent ambulances and not stopping. If they were worried about, you know, his condition, they could have handed him off to ambulances, and yet they didn't.
Chris, I had a friend who was named Omar Shahadeh during the first Intifada. He threw a stone nearby the Nativity Church in Bethlehem. The Israeli soldiers, they shot him in the foot. It wasn't fatal or anything, but they wouldn't allow anybody to come near him. For approximately 18 hours, he was bleeding and bleeding until he has died. And that was in the early 90s, back in the 90s, not even nowadays. So this is like a common procedure. But, you know, the world didn't know about what was happening here. Now it's coming out somehow.
Well, Salam, sadly, we're out of time. Thanks a lot for coming on the show again and talking about things. And I do wish you well.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for having me again.
And thanks also to Laith Maruf from FreePalestine.tv. That's all I got for this week. Until the next time. Thanks again, Salam.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone.
We had food growing up, and we were used to being able to eat, but then all of a sudden, we needed that help. That's why the food bank is here. They're here to help you, and They're here to help you.
The food bank is for anyone who needs one. Visit the food bank near you to help and be helped.